Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 124, being recorded on the 20th of April, or 420 as we all know it as, of the year 2016. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me I have Kale. And Kale, it's just you and me today for a change.
Yeah, I've been tied up with some things, I guess, and no special guest this week.
Yeah, I mean, we've got plenty of stuff to talk about, of course, so next week we have somebody special coming on, so we'll look forward to that. But the topic we're going to cover today, just in a little bit after we finish our updates for this week, is going to be about the newly released Azure Container Service. It just went GA, I think, a few days ago, I believe. And we thought it'd be a good time just to get everybody up to speed on what it is and what you can do with it and how you can take advantage of this thing now that it's in GA. I think it's something that everybody should look at, especially if you're looking at containers. All right. So before we get there, as always, Kale did a great job and putting all the updates in the show notes. So we'll kind of run through them. Kale, is there anyone you'd like to start with?
There's a couple of them that stand out this week. One is, and I'm not really in the space of IoT that much, but there is an article up here about the IoT hub throttling. And really what it is just a good article on, everybody knows what throttling is, which is basically the services that are provisioned up there, especially in Azure, have safeguards around them. So if you try to hammer them too much with requests, they can only take so much. Or it could create sort of a denial of service attack. And so the systems have, you know, things in place in order to keep that from happening, and that's what throttling's all about. So understanding the throttling limits for something like an IoT hub where you're expecting tons and tons of traffic coming through, but maybe you're not quite expecting as much as what you thought. So I think the idea is really just, it's great. It's not anything specific, like go do A, B, and C, and you're good to go. It's more of some guidance around what you should be thinking about when you're spinning up something where you're going to have 500,000 devices or more connecting to it. You know, you might sit down and think, well, it's 500,000 devices. That's not a problem. Even if everyone responded every 5 minutes, we have no problem. But what happens if it's chatty? You know, what happens if you're not thinking about all those little pieces and you end up getting throttled? And so there's some good guidance up here, some things to think about. It's worth looking through. And I actually think it's worth looking through even if you're just working with Event Hub as opposed to IoT Hub, which are kind of are hand in hand, but and think about these things.
Yeah, that is definitely something worth thinking about. You know, one of the things that caught my eye was, and I'm sure Evan would have been all over this, but since he's not around, I'll speak to it. The Azure SQL database now has something called JSON functionalities, so which I thought is pretty cool. I mean, I know for a long time we've had XML features in SQL. You could query a database and say, you know, for XML and put an XML document of some sort of the result set. And now you could say for JSON, and it returns your information in JSON format. And I guess this just makes it a little easier to, I guess, in this kind of day and age, we all communicate to devices, to our front-end devices, our mobile devices, using JSON. And instead of having to do all the conversion and parsing and whatnot, now it's all there for you. So new feature available in public preview in Azure SQL database, and definitely recommend people take a look at that if you are in fact dealing with JSON data types within your architecture.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I think there's two of them at least here, maybe the third one, that kind of revolve around analytics and machine learning type things this week. And the first one was around optimizing document search in machine learning and text analytics. And, you know, if you take a look at this, that's a big title, but, you know, there's been some articles published around this stuff around Azure Blobs. Like, we could actually start to index into those. So if we had, like, essentially, like, full-text search over files inside Azure Blob Storage, you know, we have ways to kind of crawl that now and grab that stuff. And so what this article is really around the machine learning and text analytics that you can kind of use to kind of then start to get a deeper understanding, or, you know, analyze what is up there in your blob storage or these different repositories that you have. So kind of an interesting thing. Like, I was at the GPU conference a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of time and energy being spent in figuring out how to do this stuff best, you know, object detection, but even beyond that, how do we scan text and do indexing automatically, all these different things to be able to gain insight from data that we didn't have before.
Right.
So I think this is one of those enablers too, when you take a look at it, that kind of helps you understand what we're driving to there, to get that deep understanding of some of the unstructured data that you might have out there.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely cool. And I was just thinking about this because there is one. We had an item on Azure Media Services as well, the Theo player, which is a standard HTML5, I guess, media player, now works with these Azure Media Services. But I was thinking about media services, and it would be nice also if our media is also indexable, right? Where it can convert the media into text, right? And it could say, hey, show me a file, a media file that has this particular line of text, and it could then play that line for you. So that would be something nice to have in the future. I'm sure we could hook it up with Cortana and Analytics and do something similar there.
Yeah, at the conference, I saw Facebook and those guys, especially, I think it was Twitter, is also looking into that. They have a thing called Cortex. So they have a group inside Twitter called Cortex, which is like a machine learning type group. And one of the things they're trying to do is that with full motion video and images, you know, being able to say that's a red shirt, that's the Jeep, that's a car, you know, and then index it automatically.
Sweet. Okay. So I guess that kind of rounds up all the updates, right?
Yeah, that's good.
We'll put all those links in the show notes. Thanks for putting that out there. So let's dive into the topic, Azure Container Services. Good to see this finally became GA, and didn't take long to get GA, right? It seemed like only yesterday this was in preview, and now it's GA. So they're moving pretty good, pretty fast on this. I think part of the success is that, I mean, it essentially uses a whole lot of open source technology over here. And all this technology has been around for a long time. It's pretty mature. It's pretty robust. There wasn't any convenient way to pull it all together in Azure. I think we probably spoke about it in one of the previous episodes. It used to be that if you wanted to spin up a Docker container system, you'd have to spin up your own VM, Linux-based VM, containing one of those images, and then, you know, set up the Docker server and do it all by yourself. And of course, if you wanted to have more than one, then you'd have to set up all the images yourself, all those instances yourself, and manage the whole farm of servers. And it's a lot of work, right? Linux is a lot of work. It's all command lines. You got to know all that stuff. I know there's some people that love Linux and they wouldn't mind doing this every day. But at the end of the day, if you want to get work done, you want to focus on building apps, right? You've got your apps running in these images, in these Docker containers, and that's all you want to run, and you want to keep on updating those apps. The last thing you want to do is to have to worry about all this infrastructure that goes with it. And I think that's one of the nice things. I think to put it very briefly, ACS, Azure Container Service, essentially makes all these container technologies available to you in one easy-to-use place.
Yeah, I've had some experience here with this, you know, in recent past, and working with Docker. You know, it's very hot technology right now, as is these tools like Mesosphere and Swarm and all these different, Marathon, these different tools. But it's like that laundry list of, like, DevOps. You know, it's like, okay, you know, now it's not just It almost feels to me like it was like defeated a purpose. You know, like we built this, or this container service technology was built to make things more simple, right? It was like, let's build this little isolated environment that we can kind of guarantee is in a certain state, and then we'll put our application there, and then we can kind of just scale that thing independently. It's not really tied, you know, I would say tightly coupled to a virtual machine. It's more of a abstract layer there. But then as soon as you start doing that, you soon realize that, you know, you have to be able to kind of auto-scale these things, and you have to be able to orchestrate what happens when one fails. How do you recover from that kind of stuff? And that's where these other tools started to plug in, from Mesos and the stuff I just listed off.
Swarm.
But they're really around, you know, that whole, I guess, life cycle of the application. So it's like you got the container, which is one part, and then you have to do resource scheduling and container management and job scheduling and all these different pieces. And I think that's the selling point, or for me anyhow, that's what I think makes this powerful. ACS is, it kind of abstracts you away from that. And you just say, I want to do this. Here's my container. And here, you go ahead and figure out how to run all that other stuff that
I
need.
You know, one of the things that I've been through a number of demos and I guess presentations on Docker, and you know, the canonical presentation is, okay, you know, they're going to show you maybe three Docker instances running, container instances running. There'll be a web tier, a load balancer, and some sort of a database tier, right? And all looks cool, right? But let's face it, in the real world, I'm sure it is with your customers as it is with mine, there's thousands and thousands of servers and applications that are running, right? It's not just three. So, I mean, I can't imagine, now when I think back at those demos, if they were to kind of manage like thousands of these instances, you'd go crazy, you know, doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have really good tools to manage all those instances. And I think that's what, I'm glad you mentioned the two main tools, which is Mesosphere and Swarm. So maybe we can just dive into them a little bit, and then we can talk about how ACS kind of ties it all together. So I guess it's fair to say that those are the two popular Docker management or the container management tools today, the open source tools, is Apache Mesosphere, and then Docker is, I suppose, its own company, right? Isn't that like worth like $1 billion or something today? I forget.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those hot companies. But so you've got these two very popular ways of managing these containers. And just when we say container over here, we're talking of a Docker image container. So Docker means two things. It means, I think everybody talks about the actual container image itself, what the actual mini VM, as we call it, that's running inside of that container is the Docker image. And then the Docker tools help you manage instances of that image that are running within the Docker system. So you could use the Docker tools using something like Docker Swarm, and that, you know, lets you manage all these nodes that are out there, all the servers within your cluster, as well as managing which instance of these containers is running on which cluster, moving them around, balancing the load, etc., across all the servers in your cluster. And you can do that with Docker Swarm. That is sort of the one that is made by the Docker company itself. And for that, you use the Docker command line. I think anybody who has ever done anything with Docker is very familiar with the Docker commands, and they're pretty rich. They're nice. They run on Windows. They run on the commands. That is, they run on Windows and they run on Linux. And you can point to the servers remotely and get a lot of stuff done just by using the command line. So if you're a command line guy, I suppose Docker Swarm and all the Docker commands is the way to go. Now, which one have you used, Cale? Have you tried any of the two approaches, the Mesosphere or the Docker Swarm approach?
Mesosphere and Marathon I've had some experience with. Swarm I haven't as much, but I have worked directly with Docker, the Docker API. So basically the pieces I've been working with, our partners are starting to build pieces around Docker, or I'll call it layers around Docker. So instead of, you know, Docker's got its commands for like how you basically can like build a cluster and do all these different things inside Docker. And then these partners are coming along and building on top of that layer. So they have their own CLI that will make the calls into Docker, but they make it even easier because they understand the application context. So if you said, I want to spin up, and in particular, I was working with one of the blockchain partners who's doing this, and they're basically building something on top of Docker that orchestrates those commands, and does it in a way so that it's abstract of, let's say, a cloud vendor, which is a really cool use case. So like you could say, this is on, you know, Azure, and so I want you to do this. I want to go ahead and spin up a four-node cluster here. It will go do that for you, and you tell it it was from Azure. If you say it's for Amazon, it'll also do that too, or others. You know, so that's kind of interesting that it can.
I
People are
see.
starting to build on top of Docker. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I suppose that is one of the selling points of the Docker system, the Docker container system, in that it can run anywhere. It can run on premises, on your service provider, or in the cloud, and on your machine as well, right? If you have Linux, and coming soon, if you have Windows as well. So that's using one way of kind of managing all these nodes and all these containers is using Docker Swarm. The other way is using Mesosphere, as you just mentioned. And I decided to read up a little bit on Mesosphere. I thought it was, I mean, personally, I thought it was the more interesting of the two approaches. So Mesosphere, what it does is it has something called the DCOS, the Data Center Operating System. And what it does is it takes all your machines that you have out there. Let's say you throw a bunch of machines at it, and it'll take all of them. It'll look at all the CPUs and all the memory that all those machines have, and it makes it look like one gigantic machine, right? That has like whatever, thousands of cores and thousands of gigabytes of RAM. And now you have this gigantic machine, which is made up of all these nodes, and you can start deploying your Docker images to them, and it just kind of abstracts away all the hardware that you have in your cluster. So that's one thing that it does. It provides that resource scheduling, so it knows what hardware is being used and what's available for new jobs that are coming up. The second part of Mesosphere uses this DCOS, and it also uses two other things called Marathon, which I think you mentioned briefly, Kale. And Marathon is the actual container manager. It manages which containers go where and things like that. And then it has Kronos, which is kind of more for job schedule, I suppose, if you have to run batch jobs periodically, clean up things, management jobs, etc. So it uses Marathon and Kronos together with DCOS, and that all ties them together into a nice little UI, which is the Mesos UI, management UI, which is kind of one of the things that you get if you deploy a container into a cluster and into the ACS system. So is that which of the two do you have any, I mean, I know you said you've
Yeah.
used Mesos more, but is what are you seeing out there from customers? Which way are they going?
I don't know if there's one or the other. Like I said, I've seen stuff where it writes directly into the Docker CLI tools and doing it that way, as opposed to, you know, these. I think they feel a little bit more enterprisey, like a little more, full-fledged kind of things. Like, I'm not saying Docker's not full-fledged, but when you see the interfaces for like the stuff you're talking about, Mesosphere and Marathon, they're really nice for like management and getting a view of what's happening, as opposed to, like you mentioned before, just straight up command line tools. I mean, that's straight up command line tools, nothing wrong with it, right? You can make your calls in, it's very lightweight, you can do things from your machine, but it's a little bit harder to get a sense for what's happening, as opposed to if you had like a nice web GUI, which is what some of these other tools provide. I mean, they also have, you know, command line tools, but they have nice interfaces to kind of show what's going on there. But, you know, with that comes cost, right? So you have to have, you know, this whole master slave set up. You got to have the redundancy built into those systems that are doing that management, so that in case one of those fails, one of those nodes actually goes down, you don't bring your whole cluster down. which adds complexity, and that's kind of, I think, what we're aiming for with the Azure Container Service, to remove some of that complexity and say, we'll go ahead and spin those things up for you, and you don't have to be in the weeds so much with those, at least when you're bootstrapping and getting the thing going.
Yep, it's a very good point. As a matter of fact, one of the things I noticed is that, so both of these, Mesosphere and Swarm, they have this concept, as you mentioned, you know, where there is a master node, at least one master node, and one or more slave nodes, as they call them. So when ACS had to create this abstraction around this, because, so just to be clear, if you walk up to the ACS portal today and you say you want to create a cluster, you get a choice, right? You can say, I want a Mesosphere DCOS-based cluster, or I want a Docker Swarm cluster. They're two different things. Yeah. We just talked about them. So you pick one, and once you then, and then you kind of, you know, you're stuck on that. You go down that path for that particular cluster. So the but we had to abstract it away. So in ACS, they call them master, and they call them masters and agents. Those are the two terms that I use. And so if at very minimum, if you need to spin up an ACS cluster, it has to have at least three, it has to be made up of at least three virtual machines. One of them is your master virtual machine, and the two of them will be the agent virtual machines. And the agent virtual machines, one of them is what's called as the private virtual, the private server, and the other one's called the public server. And that's just that basically means that the private server can host containers that are only accessible internally, whereas the public server can host containers that are accessible from outside. And of course, the master server then is kind of more the management server that that manages all the containers in the agents. So at minimum, you need you have to set up an ACS cluster. It has to have at minimum three virtual machines. They actually recommend you have multiple masters and, of course, as many agents as you feel you need to handle your load. And then, as you mentioned, that gives you that redundancy and reliability in case one of the agents goes down. You're not stuck without a management portal.
Yeah, I think the thing with that is nice. We just talked last week, if people listened to last week's episode, about VM scale sets, and it kind of plays kind of hand in hand here in the Azure space when we talk about this, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about a lot of higher level things here, you know, clusters and containers that are running on top of something. They are virtual machines at heart underneath there. And in this case, how do you scale that? And it's like, you know, we have this VM scale set option, and that's what we use behind the scenes to basically provision those virtual machines as well, so that we can provision them easily. We can create more or less that we need, and we can also have that redundancy you're talking about, Sajid.
Yeah, that's a very good tie and good point there, Cale. And just so we're clear, the VM scale sets handles the scale out of the actual number of nodes or the machines in the cluster, right?
That's correct.
But on top of that, if each of these agents, let's call them the agent machines, can hold many number of containers, and that container management is handled by Marathon. So if you need to say, I need, you know, 10 instances of my web container and 4 instances of my database container, you would then do that through the Marathon UI, where you go in and say, okay, you know, let's scale this up. Now, of course, that you have to have agents, enough agents to handle that kind of load. So if you have, you know, the smallest of agents, you're not going to be able to have more than maybe 5 containers in all. But if you have large agents that are the larger VM sizes, you'll obviously be able to handle more number of containers in there. Now, the one thing I did, I was doing some math in terms of, you know, how the pricing works. And I think that's one of the first things that I want to just throw out there as a little bit of caution to people that are trying to use this to play around with ACS. At minimum, as I said, you need at least three of these virtual machines, one master and two agents. So the master, as it turns out, has to be of the D2 size. Okay. Yeah. Remember, all the VM sizes A1, A0 through A whatever, and then D0 going up, and they have other series as well. But it has to be at least of D2. And a D2 one, when I looked last, is about $115 a month. right? And then on top of that, you need at least two of the agent machines, and those can be A0 and up. So A0 is $15. That's the smallest of the VMs that you have out there. So you can have two of the A0 type. But that's still, so at minimum, you're still talking about at least $145 a month to spin up an ACS cluster. And I mean, I think that's still going to be a lot cheaper than, trying to do it yourself. But I just wanted to throw that a caution out there that it's something people should be aware of when they're if they're just playing around with Docker or they want to just play around with containers, they could do it the old-fashioned way, which we talked about earlier, which is go to the VM gallery and pick the Docker whatever Linux image and do it from there. But if they are looking at a place where they want to host their dev test environment for starters and also then use it to handle their staging and production workloads, that's what ACS, that's when you're kind of getting a little more serious about this stuff, right? And you really want to put your workloads out in the cloud, your applications, the Rail applications. So that's the difference I wanted to point out to our listeners.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to point out here before we jump over was on the tech side was I don't know about you, Sajid, but I've been getting questions quite frequently now since we have ACS out there. Now it was in preview, now it's GA, but we also have Service Fabric, and so it's like, okay, we have people get traditional VMs, right? They get what IaaS is. It's pretty easy to get your head around that. These ones start to bring in a mix. Now we have these containers. We have like orchestration tools built into ACS with Service Fabric. We have a custom kind of setup there as well to handle these large scale applications and kind of manage some similar from a high level. I mean, it's a similar model to what we're looking at with ACS, in that your application is going to be running, in these isolated little blocks inside of these nodes, ultimately on infrastructure. With Service Fabric, obviously, you don't have, to deal with the VM scale sets and that stuff as much. But, it's kind of starting to cause some confusion, I think, where people are saying, which one should I be using? I don't know if you're seeing the same.
I am actually. We had the Service Fabric team actually out at my customer last week, and they gave them a demo, and the containers was a big part of the discussion there. So obviously, it's a big part of the Service Fabric discussion. Now, I mean, I guess the one of the key points I'd like to make is that obviously Service Fabric is something that runs on premises as well as is in the cloud, right? It's kind of one of those hybrid things. And if you're one of those customers that's looking for a good on-premises solution that eventually will scale to the cloud, obviously Service Fabric is kind of the ideal thing for you. And in that case, you could use Service Fabric to host your Service Fabric native applications written in .NET, or now that the Linux version is in preview, you could write Java applications there as well. But you could also host containers, Docker containers, in the Service Fabric. And I mean, that's a very simplistic model. It eventually runs the Docker program as a guest program within Service Fabric. So it's as far as Service Fabric is concerned, it's just a docker.exe that's running. But it turns out that docker.exe is running your particular container. So that's how that works. Obviously, with ACS, there is no on-premises version of ACS. It's a cloud-only solution. So I would imagine that at least right up front, it's probably a different set of needs in each approach.
Yeah, I think the thing to think about there, though, is stuff's been out there for a little while, at least now, this container technology, and some people have been running that themselves in their data centers. This stuff that we're talking about here, Mesosphere and Docker and all those, you can run them all manually yourself, obviously. You could go build a machine and put those things on them. You could run them in other cloud vendors as well. So I think that's a thing to consider too. If someone's doing a migration and they're already in this space, they're already Dockerized. They already have things built around Mesos or some of their DevOps. So I think it's important if people are, our listeners are approaching, customers or people with these solution needs. One of the things is to figure out like where are they comfortable right now? Like what are they running? What's their stack look like? Are they containerized, and what container technology are they using, kind of thing, and try to figure it out from there. Which place it's, I don't think either one of these is a hammer that we should be using for everything, but yeah.
And I think I was trying to clarify this just before the we got together today, Kale, but maybe you know the answer. I think right now ACS is only Linux containers, correct? Or is it also
I'm
handling?
not
I wasn't
sure about that.
I wasn't 100% sure it would handle Windows containers just yet, because when I went through the portal, there was no option like that, you know.
I believe you're right. I think you're right. Yeah. Well, let's confirm that before we post the thing here, but we'll double check that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it is just Linux.
So just with that in mind, this I just wanted to bring up a couple of kind of points before you get to the before you go to the portal and try to and you can do this right today, right? It just showed up in my portal. I just under there's a separate item for containers now when you try to create a new service. One of the things that you have to do, it asks for, is an SSH public-private key. So this is something that requires a little bit of setup, a little bit of prep work before you even create the ACS service. I guess there's a link that I'll put in the show notes to a little walkthrough shows you how to do that. But you can use PuttyGen, I think is how you say it. It's part of the Putty. Windows app that allows you to do SSH into a server, for example, and there's a utility called PuttyGen which will help you generate this SSH public-private key combination. So you need the public key, obviously. You have to give the public key to ACS when you create your ACS cluster. So that's something you want to have beforehand before you start that process. And one of the reasons you need it is. Okay, once you set up ACS running in Azure, and let's say you've got some command, you've got a Docker a command running, say on your Linux box, or on your Windows box, at your desk, right? And you want to be able to use that to connect into the ACS system running in Azure. You have to do it through this SSH tunnel. So you have to establish that tunnel first using the keys that I just talked about, and then you'll be able to run anything on your own machine, at your desk, for example, on your laptop, and connect remotely through to the ACS system using the standard Mesosphere APIs or the Docker APIs, depending on which specific technology you select.
Awesome.
So just a little tip over there.
And I assume this, Sujeet, would be like, just to kind of wrap this all together, we talked about a lot of things. So basically, the portal, when we go into the portal, it's going to ask us a couple questions about how we want to run our cluster up here. Do we want Swarm or the alternative? And we can put in the input things, like you mentioned, the SSH keys and names and all these kind of things that we need. But behind the scenes, right, this is ARM, right? So we can have an ARM script out of this thing to basically say, like, if we wanted to spin one of these up and try a few things and then tear it down, and then we could. You could basically get the ARM script and use that to rehydrate this if we wanted to create sort of like dev or test type scenario with these things.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, so you could have a complete dev cluster set up beforehand and then spin it up. Yep. That's an excellent point. Cool. All right, so Azure Container Service. As I said, if you think you're ready for hosting containers in the cloud, take a look at Azure Container Service. Just keep in mind that there are minimum costs that are involved with ACS, and so I don't want you to burn through your MSDN subscription if just in case that's what you're using. All right, Akil, anything else you want to add?
No, I think
We
this is
covered.
good. This was a good. I think this was a good overview. At least, understanding all the pieces that are involved and what you're getting into here with ACS, and hopefully the listeners understand a little bit of the difference between what Service Fabric is and what something like ACS with all these components is as well.
Great. All right then. We'll call it a show, and hopefully we'll get Evan next week then.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kale, for all your input. Take care. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.